What I want to say is that I don't say that Jews were not killed. Absolutely, thousands and thousands of thousands of people and Jews were killed in the Second World. I'm not saying that. The thing that that I'm reacting against, that I want to open up this discussion around, is the extermination plan of the Jewish race, the gas chambers, and the numbers of people killed or murdered in these gas chambers. The number 6 million, people think that, yep, that was it. That is it, 6 million, that's it. And but very few people, I think, are aware of that this number, 6 million, occurred, I think it was 236 times from 1890 up until the Nuremberg trial. After the Second World War, it was absolutely nothing new. It was being pumped out in newspapers all over the world on a regular basis. The Jews, that they were being prosecuted and they were being threatened, and the number 6 million was being, I don't know why they used this number, if there was a reason for that, but it was a number that was being pumped out on from multiple sources during many, many years.
Yeah, from 18, what did you say, 1880 and then onwards all the way up?
I think it was from the first time it was in 1890, as far as I know, and as 231 or 36 times that it has been counted, you know, that this 6 million thing
has come up with in the media somewhere. Yeah.
Exactly, because it's not 5.5 million, it's not 4.2 million, it's always been 6 million, 6 million, 6 million, 6 million. And at the Nuremberg trial, 6 million. You know, it's like that. But if you look at the different death camps and the different concentration camps and so on, the official numbers have never, ever been able to show 6 million. They've shown a lot less. And when you really start looking into the numbers instead of just somebody saying something, but when you start looking into how the numbers have been counted, how and then the names and identity of the people, you know, that was transported to these so-called death camps and that did not get out alive and so on, it has never ever got anywhere close to 6 million. And for instance, if you take Majdanek, which was one of these so-called death camps. The first museum that was open after the Second World War, it said on the wall, 2 million dead Jewish dead people there. In 1944, that the number, the official number, was not 2 million; it was 1.7 million. I mean, we're talking 300,000 people difference. That is a whole city, you know. Then at the Nuremberg trial a few years later, it was 1.5 million. That's 500,000 less. In 1975, there were new official numbers coming out. It was 1,380,000. In 1991, suddenly the numbers came down. I mean, we're talking about these different organizations who have been trying to prove how many people that was actually killed there. In 1991, we're down to 360,000. That's from 2 million to 360,000.
Yeah.
Then in 1992, it was 235,000. Then in 1998, it was 42,200. And that number was later changed because, I don't know why, but 2005, it was up to 78,000. So as far as I know, that is the official number from Majdanek now, 78,000. But we're talking from 2 million down to 78,000. That is a massive difference, I would say. And anyone that can come out and officially claim a number like that, that later turns out to be a total lie, we need to look more, we check these sources out, because apparently they cannot be trusted.
Yeah. Well, there's so many aspects to this. It's kind of difficult to know where to tackle it. But the main point here, I think, to try to get focus on is how things have changed through time. I listened to David Irving. He's an interesting historian that has dedicated his life to this. He's written, you know, the only biography, I think, on Hitler and a number of other things. And he And he talked about still to this day that the archives, the paperwork is in such shambles. I think the majority of the papers is in Britain, but it's been divided up too. And you know, the way that they've been trying to archive and go through everything and whatnot. But the bottom line is that according to him, there have not been found an official paper trail for the extermination plan. And of course, this is one of the major, you know, problems that they have then in order to try to, you know, reason around this. But I mean, what's interesting here is how they've managed to, in my view, kind of construct something, you know, in hindsight, afterwards. I don't want to jump ahead too much already here, but just the way that I think an important issue for people to remember is that you can't go into this question and be armed with everything you've been told about it, because then you're missing the point and you're trying to piece it together. Just pretend you don't know anything about it and then deconstruct it up from the ground up and try to look at, okay, what has been exaggerated, what was propaganda, etc. But there's so many clues here. There's so many different aspects to this that it is important to look at in order to try to get a bearing on what actually happened and in what order did it occur, how much official you know, plans was in the works at this time. What do you think happened?
It's a really tricky one. But one thing that is very important to understand is after every single war, the history is written by the conqueror, the winner. They are the ones that write the history books saying we were the heroes and they were the bad guys. And in this case, after the Second World War, the bad guys was officially the Germans. They are the ones who are blamed for everything, and they are the ones who have been having to carry all this guilt for so many years.
Yeah.
And this whole Holocaust thing, it was not something that was pumped out right after the Second World War. It was not something that in the 50s people were like, oh my God, the Holocaust, as far as I know, it was sometimes in the 70s that this suddenly was boosted up.
Yep.
In a way that was totally like, whoa, where did that come from? And once again, like when you look at many different conspiracies and also like the whole moon hoax and so on, Hollywood has a part of it in this whole propaganda machine.
Mm-hmm.
And the Hollywood part is, you really have to be aware of that one, because they used Hollywood from day one and pumped it out in different ways. You know, it was like when they liberated Dachau, General Eisenhower, he got one of the film directors from Hollywood. It was a man by George D. Stevens. He was a director from Hollywood. He had done Laurel and Hardy, Elizabeth Taylor, many of these big. I don't know how many Oscars he won. And they got him to Normandy. He filmed there, but also when they filmed the liberation of Dachau, he was there filming loads and loads and loads of this footage that we are being presented with again and again and again. And the footage that I think all of us have seen are these awful mass graves, you know, where you see this bulldozer, you know, just pushing down dead bodies and so on. And you think that is part of the death machine, the German death machine. But we are not being informed that it was actually that when they came towards this concentration camp, the commander, the German commander, his name was Josef Kramer. Kramer. He was no longer in command. But when the Allies approached the camp, he sent up soldiers there saying, "Please, be careful, very careful, because we have a lot of typhus and different diseases going here. Please, you cannot just let the prisoners go, because it will start a whole epidemic, you know, here. So please." So the Allies said, for sure, they came in, they liberated the camp, but they kept the prisoners there because there was so much typhus and other awful diseases there. But what they also did was to find out the death toll, and because they heard all of these stories, they dug up some of these mass graves, and this is what we see. These bodies were pulled up, counted, and checked out, and then they were bulldozed down into that. That is what is being filmed. And the guy driving the bulldozer is actually a British officer. But when you see it, you think, oh, it must be a Nazi, part of the whole Nazi war or death machine that we're seeing here. And also, the reason for them being so starved and so, I mean, many of these victims died from starvation.
Sure.
And typhus, these were, I would say, one of the major killers in this area. But the reason why they were so undernourished, one of the major reasons was because this was the end of the war when Germany was totally bombed out from the Allies and the British, the Royal Air Force and the Americans that just bombed the crap out of Germany. And these concentration camps were located very close to big industries like IG Farben and other companies, because that was where the labor was needed. And so when the trains and the tracks and everything was bombed, there was no way that food and these things could come to these camps either. And at the same time, the German population was totally starved as well. So it was an awful situation for the whole of Europe, and very much so for Germany.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have to keep that in mind when we see these awful images of these very, very thin and skinny people that have been starved to death and so on. You have to ask yourself, why did they die like that? And I would say the bombings is a major part of this, because these were, to a great extent, work camps. I mean, they were there.
Exactly. This was a slave labor. They wanted to have production because of to fuel the war that was ongoing. This is absolutely true, you know. And the fact is, what I think as well, Ulle, is that what's strange about this, I think something happened before the war that many people miss out about, and that's the official boycott campaign against Germany. There's a famous headline, people can Google it, they'll find it, called Judea Declares War on Germany. And what's so strange in this situation is that you had many Jews living in Germany at the time, and they didn't have a country. It basically means that you had within the country potential foreign elements. Like, see, this would happen in any other war scenario. This is what people need to understand, that if German soldiers were caught in England, or even Germans, if war had been declared between Germany and England, the German people would have been rounded up, and they would have been put in concentration camps or in other facilities as a way to make sure that these who are potential enemy combatants don't decide to strike military targets within the country, etc. And that's one of the reasons. There's many other reasons. There's a whole game here of things that we could talk about. But one of the reasons is that it was, I think, and even if it was very official or unofficial, there was a declaration of war to a certain extent that occurred. And that's one of the reasons why they said, okay, we need to try to contain the issue and contain the problem. And a plus for them and a bonus situation is, of course, that they could also start an industry of slave labor to be able to feed the war machine. That's what I think occurred anyway. What do you think, Ulle?
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. And I just want to say also, we're talking about Germans. I mean, Germany, before the Second World War and the whole thing was an extremely intelligent people, you know, very, I mean, this is the thing when you talk about Germany, you say they're so organized, they're so disciplined, they're so square-headed, you know, the ding, 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 order must sein. And then here, suddenly when we talk about these labor camps or so-called death camps, suddenly the figures doesn't match up, the architecture doesn't make up. It's totally the when we're going to go into how the gas chambers were constructed, so stupidly done if they were gas chambers. But if they were used for something totally different, then it all makes sense. The rest of the camps, very organized, very strict and very controlled. And then around the gas chambers, absolute mayhem. It doesn't match up again. I just want to point out also with this footage that we see from so many of these concentration camps, please notice that it is very often the same images you are being shown again and again and again and again. And when the Soviet troops came and liberated Auschwitz, what they told you, if you look into it really, they wanted to film. And they said it was awful what they saw, but they did not film when they liberated it because they said they couldn't film inside the bunkers or inside the buildings because there was no electricity, so there was no light, so they couldn't film. So what they did was instead they filmed the people on their way home. And if you look at these people, they're most of them well-fed. Look at this Russian footage. It's not at all this thing where they're totally skinny and totally half dead and stumbling around. Not at all. And then they said that some weeks later, they had Polish from the population and so on, and people who had been in the camp as well. They called them back and got them into the buildings, and then they could film when they were lying in all of these bunks and so on. But that we're never told that. If we get the impression that they came in and filmed the camps the way they were. No, they were not. And you can even see this film director, George Stevens, in one of the footage, the film sequences where they hold this guy. He can barely stand outside the door and it looks like, oh, total mayhem. And suddenly the film director from Hollywood just comes in from the left and, oops, sorry, I'm in the way, and goes out again.
Yep, I remember seeing that.
It's a bit like the moon hoax where suddenly, you know, the moon falls down in the background and the lighting drops out and the shadows doesn't match up. And please, for anyone doubting these things, when you look at how many times we have been duped, it's unreal. So if we're duped once again in this topic, I would say it's very possible.
Now, someone did a pretty gruesome video, I guess, at least if we take the accounts as we get them to us, the official story. If they're not, then it's less gruesome. But the person did try to show, or they examined how an efficient extermination camp would look. It's very, I think the difference, one thing I want to point out before we continue is that usually what we get, and this is an interesting factor in terms of, you know, psychology and approach to the topic, but all of the videos that I've seen and people in trying to look at this from another view than the official story, they go straight for the big picture. They zoom out. They look at, you know, okay, where are we? When are we looking at this? What happened? Who is involved? What is going on? How was this supposedly done? How could it have been done that way? Very, very, again, meticulous, kind of very, very scientific, very rational, which is good. The other approach that we usually get from the official story is that we never hear too much about those things, at least not in the beginning. They always begin by zooming into the closest story you can imagine of, let's say, a little girl or something like that. You don't know what's going on. You don't know where are we? What's happening? Why is this happening? What's the explanation for, you know, who are these evil people? What are they doing? Why are they doing this? They zoom into the most closest emotional story that they can find, I believe, Ulla, as a way to make you forget about those bigger questions, of forgetting about wait a minute, you know, why is this even happening? Is there any reason behind this? And when, because this is in most cases why reason goes out the window. That's why so many people are explaining all the time. There's who would have such evil within them? Why did they do this? It's just, we can't understand, right? That's usually what we get.
I always get to that thing that I can expose the what happened, how it was carried out, but the mentality behind many of these atrocities, I it's beyond me. I do not understand it at all. So I've given up to try and understand evil and just focus on exposing it, let the truth out there, and let it liberate us.
Right, exactly. No, what I'm saying is that it's just, I think the evil doesn't make sense because we haven't gotten the full story. That's what I'm getting to here.
Yeah, I understand.
But go ahead, Ola.
The thing is, like I said, I've been to quite a few of these different concentration camps and so on. And to start with, it was told to the rest of us that all of them had gas chambers and were extermination camps. But then over the years, fewer and fewer and fewer, and none of them in Germany that we could check out, because we had the Iron Curtain, is that we couldn't go into Poland and so on for many years. There's so many years we couldn't go and see for ourselves. And to start with, the German camps suddenly, whoop, no, there were no death camps in Germany. Suddenly,
and that was retracted, right? Because initially that was not the case, but then all in the
West.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. No, first we were told, no, all of them had gas chambers there. That's how they did it. This was a killing machine of a magnitude never, ever seen before. But then, just like you say, when you go close and you start saying, okay, so let me see the evidence. Let me see how did they do it and so on. Then suddenly, nope, not here, not here, not there. So one of the things, I've been to Sachsenhausen, Auschwitz, Treblinka, and when you're there and you look at it, it just doesn't make sense. It's like, how was it physically possible or technically possible to do this? And when you hear the stories, I think it's very important as well to listen to the witnesses of these people, because very often they're handpicked people, I would say, and very often mm-hmm. they're related as well. And many times when they repeat their stories, they do not repeat the same story. And that one is for me like, whoa, hang on a second.
Yeah.
If you've seen something that awful, it would burn on your, it would make an imprint on your brain that you would never get rid of. I mean, I've spoken to people that have been traumatized from awful things. It's there. It will never leave them, you know. And here suddenly they talk about these awful things and then they keep changing it. Very odd. And once again, these are things that say, whoop, I need to check this out. If you start wobbling around with the facts that are that important, we need to check it out.
Yeah, there were many young people as well, of course, that we get testimony from. Let's talk about the eyewitnesses a little bit later, because that's a very important thing in this. But, you know, as you detail, there are many, many, many different camps. You know, there were, I tried to find an official number of how many camps there was. Someone gave me 20,000, you know, if that's true, I don't know. But man, we have the big ones, you know, as you said, you have Majdanek, you have obviously the Auschwitz / Birkenau. Birkenau was basically the place where they stayed, if you will. That was the actual location of the housing, if you will. You had Dachau, Buchenwald, Treblinka, Sobibor, many, many others. And so there was a division between the camps that was in the west and then those who were in the east, and that there was a separation that occurred, that somewhere along the line, the story started to differ between the eastern versus the western side, right?
Yeah. And this whole thing with the gas chambers, it came from the Soviets. You know, the in the end of the war, everybody was trying to get to Berlin first of all, to get there first. And so you had the Allies, the English, the Soviet Union, all of them were trying to get there. And that's why some of the camps were liberated by the Russian army and some were from the Allies and so on. But the whole rumor or the reports, as far as I know, of these gas chambers came from the Soviets, and they also were the ones that handed out the numbers, the death numbers and so on, which has later turned out to be absolute false. But when you look at these, like, for instance, if we look at Treblinka, as far as I know, the official story is about 700,000 people, Jews, that was gassed, buried there. Then later they were dug up and cremated. That is the official story. Wow. Because they say that, you know, that the Germans, they gassed them and just buried them. But then when towards the end of the war, Hitler and the guy said, oh my God, they're going to find out what we've been up to. So dig all the victims up and cremate them and then get rid of the evidence that way. I mean, but we're talking about like 700,000, they say you do that. If you just take the size of a body and multiply it with 700,000, we're talking like massive, massive, big mass graves. I mean, incredibly big. And there's an additional 50,000 that is said to have been gassed and then cremated straight away. So they weren't buried and dug up. But when you look at the Treblinka gas chamber, once again, we look at it, and what do they tell you? The official story is that it was diesel engines that was pumping out. They were not using Cyclone B. They were using diesel engines, and that they gassed them with the exhaust. But you look at it chemically, diesel exhaust, it will give you nausea. It will give you a massive headache, but it will not kill you. So here we are. They're officially killed by diesel engines, and you can see the machine room, everything with the big diesel engines. How did they do it? How did they do it with a diesel engine? They're even, you know, like you got TV ads nowadays where I see, there was especially one where a guy tried to commit suicide in a new car with a diesel engine, and he wakes up the next morning feeling fine because the diesel is totally, it's not mortal.
Yeah.
So the whole thing, that is a major one that just says absolute lie. There's something, a total lie being told here. Then if, I don't know if you want to say anything about Treblinka, otherwise I'll just go on to Auschwitz and...
I wanted to just mention, you know, there are obviously a number of videos that have been made that are pretty good, that also detailed some of the numbers here that we yet haven't gone into, but I'm just mentioning to people that I'll add some of the links here so that people who want to look into this for themselves and you know, have an open view on this and say, all right, I'll look at what the evidence is that these guys present and I'll make it up for myself, or I'll make up my mind about it. But anyway, look at those, because they detail, again, the very gruesome details, it might seem on the surface. But it's a necessary if we are to get to the truth with all things. But they examine the very volume of bodies, for example, that had to be disposed if they were first buried, as you said, and then dug up and burned later. And the sheer, the monumental task of doing this, and even the volume that is, you know, entailed in all of this, is very, very, I mean, when you kind of see it in front of you laid out with the numbers and you see the sizes, and you try to also look at some of the camp areas and see, wait a minute, where could they have possibly even fit all these people if it took place as you think it would? So therefore, I urge people to look at those. There's one, for example, called the one-third of the Holocaust, where they look at, I think it is Treblinka specifically, and they go through this very question, Ulla, and examine that, you know, there is an awful lot of bodies here, and for them to be burnt in the way they were, with the kind of winters that they had in Poland at that time, you know, it's very, very difficult to pull this off.
Yeah, and the thing is that if you go to a crematory, is that what you call it in English? I think so, where you burn bodies after when somebody has died.
Yep, yep.
It takes a lot, you know. A body does not burn easily. I mean, we're to a very large extent water, and it's not easy to burn something. And also, when you burn the body, you still end up with the skeleton, the skull, and all of these things that had to, you have to deal with that as well.
Be crushed or something like that.
Crushed. Yeah. And the time to burn a body, it's like at least an hour. If you haven't got, even nowadays with super duper, very efficient ovens and so on, I think they're down to, 40 minutes or something like that. But when you look at these guys, when they talk about the witnesses from the Holocaust, they're talking about that it took 20 minutes and that they put, after they were gassed, they put them in the crematorium. And they put like up to five on top of each other and stack them in there to get burned at the same time. But when you look at the ovens, you can't do it.
No.
You max two. I've seen them. It's like maximum two bodies on top of each other and hardly that.
Now, the reason, I was going to mention that as well, Ola, the reason, of course, why they had crematoria, you detailed this earlier, but typhus is a form of lice, very detrimental at the time. It did kill a lot of people, and the crematoria was involved in burning the bodies of the people that had died during that time. And the numbers were quite high, of course, because as you said, it was a detrimental effect around here. There was, a lot of things that were going on that, didn't account for the best, living experience, if we can call it that. And that's one of the reasons why they had these ovens at most of the camps. But as you say, the mathematics alone of calculating, per body, how many hours it took, and then looking at the official numbers, it just doesn't make sense. So if anything, then something else had to be used to incinerate all these bodies that they claim, not in the way that we're being told anyway.
Yeah. And, I'm not saying that all the survivors, people who were in these awful camps, I mean, for sure they were awful, awful, awful. And I'm not saying that all of the survivors are lying. Absolutely not. But Treblinka, was like a train station where they were divided up and then sent out to many, many, like you said, there were so many different camps. And it was like a train central. So many people are in the camps when they were divided into men and women and children into different groups. And when they saw them walk into these buildings, never to be seen again, and then later told that they had been gassed and burned. That is what they've believed ever since, because they never saw the people that went into these buildings. But the thing is, many of them, I would say most of them, went into this building and was taken care of, which we're going to describe the techniques, how they did it. And then on the other side, they were put on trains and taken to other camps.
Right.
So many people, very few people that have survived have been in the so-called, in the teams that took care of the bodies that because they had Jews that took care of the bodies after they had been gassed and pulled them to the crematoria, burned them and took care of that whole thing. But very few people have survived that saw all the steps, from going in, undressing, being gassed, and then put in the ovens and taken care of. Very few witnesses have seen this. So that's why we have to look very closely at what these people are saying, because that is the whole synopsis in one go.
Yeah.
If you understand what I'm saying.
Sure. I mean, I can imagine, obviously, the rumors as well that was going around at the time. I mean, this was not on a voluntary basis. This was very, forcefully done. And you could just imagine, obviously, it's understandable. It's human psychology. Like, well, what is going on? Oh my God, they're going to kill us. Right. I mean, so the question is what happened, of course, in these trains on the way there. And then you have the scenario then that they shaved people's heads. They were issued a camp uniform, more or less, I believe, because the typhus issue was so ubiquitous everywhere that they tried to delouse, the clothes, and they deloused certain things, which they used, Cyclone B and certain, places as well. You can even see the blue residue in some of these, rooms where they actually deloused the clothing. So, one can just imagine what one might have been thinking when you saw all of this, when this was going on. You know, you might never have seen something like this before in your life, you know?
No, it must have been awful, absolutely awful. And for sure, the chimneys, there was smoke coming from the chimneys all the time because bodies were being burnt. But we're talking about the gas chamber thing. That is the issue, not that people died there.
Sure, of course.
So in 1942, that was when this whole typhus thing started, and it hit especially the areas where the hygiene and these, when people were very crowded, that was the area where this lice really went for it. So it became very, very dangerous. And so in these camps, what they did was they started a whole new, and it wasn't only in the camps, they did it in many, many different areas as well in Europe at the same time, was that people had to shave the hair off because that is where the lice were, and also get the clothes off and get them cleaned. So what happened was when they came with these train loads of people, they were taken off on the so-called train station near the camp, or the camps had their own sort of like train station. And then they were divided up in men on one side and women, children on the other side. They were also divided up in people that was fit for work, what type of work they could do, what type of career they had, if they were a carpenter, an electrician or whatever. They were divided up depending on where they were needed, and then transported in different directions all over the place. But before that, they had to be deloused. And so they shaved their heads and they took their clothes. They gathered all the clothes. They got them uniforms on these stripy uniforms. And then they had a shower. They would, the one before DDT, they were spraying them with different things to get rid of these lice and so on.
Yeah.
And then put in the uniforms and then transported into the camps. But the clothes and the shoes, everything in that was piled up and put in special rooms, which are the ones that are being named death chambers many times.
Yeah.
Where they were. They killed the lice with Cyclone B, which was the predecessor to what it was called DDT, if you remember that, very toxic, but anti-lice, anti-bug spray. And so in these rooms, they had the Cyclone B gas that was heated up in the walls and then sprayed over the clothes. And then there were openings in the ceiling, and then the gas went out there. But it wasn't even dangerous enough so that the people who did this had to have gas masks. It wasn't even that dangerous, but it killed the lice and it stopped to a very big extent the spreading of this awful typhus and so on.
So ironically, Ulla, this was done to actually save lives.
If you look at it, if you look at the death toll before and after, it went down because of these things. So it's like very, very confusing when you look at these things, because you have to really open your mind and see, whoa, is this actually possible? Because in these chambers where they did take care of the clothes and so on, that is where you find the residue in the walls from Cyclone B. They're blue.
Prussian blue, they call it. Yeah, from Prussia.
Yeah, very, very clear blue. But the so-called gas chambers, you know, the ones that we've seen on these Hollywood movies, Schindler's List and other things, like where it was told that they went in there and the gas was dropped down from openings in the ceiling. It looked like they were there to take a shower, but instead of water, there were gas coming. And that killed the, it took about some 20 minutes. They died, and then all of these bodies was then pulled out and taken to the crematorium and burnt there. That's the official story.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But when you look at how they were constructed, we're talking like German efficiency, German discipline, German order, most sign. And here, when you look at the way these are built, absolutely awful quality. And many of them in Auschwitz and other concentration camps has later turned out that they were altered after the end of the war.
By Russian troops, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Why they did that, I'm not really sure. But like, for instance, the chimneys that you see, oh, the awful chimneys, they're not even connected to the ovens. They're just chimneys. And when you look in the rooms where the showers and this is where they were killed, you see that they're in some of these concentration camps, in some of them, they're like windows where you can just knock out with a fist, you know?
Yeah.
And here they say that thousands of people have died in there and struggled, and that you could find, you know, that they scratched into the concrete with their bloody fingers, you know, trying to get out. And then there's a window, and also there are wooden doors where the gas could leak out very easy, you know, and the door could very easily be pushed out. Doesn't make sense. And then you see, for instance, in Auschwitz, there's a big open room. But you can see where they've knocked down walls, that it was before that it was separate rooms. And also these several of them are underground. And when you look at it, the way on the early drawings and so on, where it says was that these were morgues, and the reason why they were underground was to keep the as cool as possible for the bodies not to deteriorate too quickly.
Right.
You know, because we're talking about thousands and thousands and thousands of prisoners, disease, all of these things, starvation, people died there. So they needed to get rid of these bodies. And many times, if they dug them down in the ground, it would contaminate the water, the groundwater. So they needed to burn them.
So that's an important thing to remember as well, because obviously the way then that they throw in the Cyclone B pellets and these kinds of things is a very difficult process to do it in that way. But you even have to have, for example, the room at a higher, a permanent temperature for the gas to actually be released. I think it's cyanide. Is it hydrogen cyanide or cyanide acid? What is it called again?
I don't know the chemical. I'll find it somewhere.
Yeah, I'll find it in a moment here. But yeah, exactly. But anyway, it's a quite complex procedure to have the gas released out of these pellets. And you think if they built it kind of underground to keep it cool, that would be counterintuitive to the way you would have to heat up the room consequently to release the gas, for example.
But it's also when you see, you know, they pumped up the numbers to try and make logic to get it up to these incredible amounts, like 6 million and so on. So the official story is that every time they filled the gas chamber in Auschwitz with about 2,000 people. When you look at 2,000 people, what the body volume, they're like standing up against, you cannot even sit down in the area where we're talking about. So you can push 2,000 in there, gas them. But what then happened, and what the so-called witnesses that were there and taking care of the bodies, they said that they were standing up and they died standing up, you know?
Right, well, so many of them are so crowded, yeah.
Yeah, but here we are again with the doors, you know, opening the wrong way, the holes in the ceiling where they threw down the Cyclone B. They have later found out that they have been recreated, as it's called, you know, that they were not there to start with, but they were put there by the Soviets and then put together, closed, and then opened up again. When they made it into a museum. So it's not the actual ones, and they're leaking. It's so badly done, you know.
Anyway, yeah, so do you remember too, there was a couple of things there, for example, where there was an elevator that was to bring up the bodies up to the crematory, and it was in one of the camps. I think this was Auschwitz, if I remember correctly. Sorry if I get this wrong, exactly what camp it was, but it was laid out in such a way that it was very, very inconvenient to try to get all the bodies out of this room where they had been gassed up, you know, one floor up to where the crematory was. And it was just so small, you would be amazed that they would make it so difficult for themselves if this was the plan, you know.
Now, there's two buildings called the gas chambers built in an angle, and then there's only one little door opening to get all of these bodies out into an elevator up and then pulled over and put into the crematory. I mean, God, if you have to do that with 2,000 bodies, it's like unreal the amount of work.
Yeah, every half hour you do something like that, even if, you know,
we're talking about that the people that did that was like 5 or 10 working there to do these things. But also when you listen to these people, they say that the bodies turn black and blue. But when you look at somebody who's been gassed in that way, their body should be totally pink.
Right.
They go, when you're gassed in that way, the blood, it just expands on the inside. There's no way for it to get out. And the body itself, you can see that on autopsy photos. It gets a very bright pink color, very, very strong reddish pink color. But here, the so-called witnesses say they were black and blue. Does not make up. And also, these are the same people that also said that we stacked the bodies on top of each other. Well, there was no room inside the ovens. So how did you do that? The same people that also said it took 20 minutes, where it's absolutely impossible to do it in 20 minutes. Also, how many, even if you stacked them five on top of each other with the gas chambers that was there, you would still, it would take like, I don't know how long to get rid of 2,000 and then less up to the millions that we're talking about. It is not possible. It is just not possible.
Yeah, there was an interesting testimony from one of the Sonderkommando, as they call them.
The name of them.
Yeah, they were assigned with overseeing this process, basically. And they were, of course, they were, part of the camp people themselves. But there's this one testimony, it's in another video, and I'll link to that as well, that examines this in great detail, this question here right now. And it's a very strange and very contradictory testimony that he gives. I forget his name. Was it, let's see if I can find it here. Vergali or something. Let's see. I don't know if you remember that or his name. Oh, Dario Gabay. That was his name.
Yeah, I know him.
Dario Gabay. Yeah. Very strange.
He later made a film career.
That's right. That's right. Wasn't that actually before though? Wasn't he before the war broke out? He had a career, or was it right after?
Right after.
Okay. Yeah.
And then I think along when Steven Spielberg started doing the whole hype around this thing, he got a new career. And he and a handful of other people have been, as far as I know, touring around, giving interviews, giving speeches and talks about these things. But many of them, I would very much say, when you listen to these, you need to keep an open mind and really listen to what they're saying, because there's a lot of it that does not make sense, you know. It doesn't add up.
Yeah, you're right.
And also, please, this guy, when you see quite a few of these people that testifies are related, they're in the same family. And the stories keep changing. The stories keep changing. The details keep changing.
Exactly, yeah. Over time. They said something maybe in the early 80s or something, and then in the late 90s, it sounds like it's been exaggerated, and something else has kind of come out of all of this. It's very strange, you know?
Yeah, but it's like there's one of them, for instance. He says that, it was so awful. One day a German guard, he just wanted to see if he could shoot three babies with one bullet. So they lined them up and shot, and all three died with the same bullet. But then later, when he tells the same story, I mean, if you experience something as horrific as that, it would be there in your mind, that, you know, the details would just be there. And then later in a book, he talks about the same thing, but then it's too... they're in their 20s, the victims, you know.
Right.
Same story, but it's not babies anymore. It's young people. And this is just one. There's so many of these things that doesn't match up.
Now, do you think that some of the people kind of, as time has gone through and it's changed, that they kind of, do you think they believe themselves a little bit? Or is it just that they know what they're doing? They know that they're not given the truth here.
tricky question.
I think
when you're talking about, major mistakes like that, I would say here's somebody who is not telling the truth.
Right.
For some reason, why he's not telling the truth, I cannot say, but there's, when you look at so many false flag operations and so many false testimonies that has been given over the years to start wars
taking out babies out of the incubators, throwing them on the floor. Do you remember that? I mean, it was like,
that was
a little girl, you know, and they used her and they told her what to say and they staged this whole thing, you know. It's like,
it was the daughter of the ambassador. She
nonetheless, they used a little girl, you know. It's their own, of course, but you know, that's how horrible that was, you know.
And it's so cold in the way they do it. But